All right, on this episode of Bouts Talking Bouts, happy to be speaking with an individual who's got quite the bantamweight fight coming up. It is going down on July the 24th. It is Colorado Combat Club 7, and it is the main event attraction. We have Alejandro Rodriguez taking on Kai Wu and welcoming Kai on the show for the very first time. How are the training preparations and everything going ahead of this one here, man?
Oh, man, it's great. It just feels great. It's so good to be back to normal, you know, or what the new normal is called, right? You know, despite COVID and all this crazy stuff, it's really nice to be able to train for a fight again, because, you know, I never really knew during COVID, like, how bad you never saw the light at the end of the tunnel. That's kind of how bad it was. And I'm just glad that I have this opportunity. And, you know, I thank the promotion. I thank my opponent. And I'm just glad things are working out again.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a little bit. Like, I saw you had that post about how it had been a year and a half since you've gotten out there and just finally being able to announce some news. And, I mean, imagine it's just a compounded sense of enthusiasm just with this being a main event. And from what I was seeing, too, it seems like there's going to be some semblance of a live audience here. So a lot of cool facets to this one.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, out a year and a half, you know, that I was at the prime of my career, at the top, you know. I mean, I would say still am. It's just, you know, just imagine building your career. You're on this crazy run only to have not injuries, but just some random pandemic that happens once in a lifetime. You know, you know, it's like halt your momentum. So to be able to come back and get after a year and a half, because I'm not used to taking time off. If you look at my fights, I've always spent a lot of time fighting. My turnaround time has always been very fast due to the lack of amateur experience, you know. So when this fight came along and it turns out it's main event for me, I'm like, man, what an honor it is to come back, first fight, main event. You know, you just couldn't ask for, you know, I would have taken any fight, to be honest, on the undercard. It doesn't matter. But the fact that I got a great management team, Dodge Sports, that looks after me now, and they made sure to get me the fights that they think I deserve, you know, so it was really nice to be able to come back from this long layoff to be in a main event.
And I feel like I know the answer, but thought to pause at the question all the same. Kind of talking about like the delays with like getting able to get out there. And like you said, it's not necessarily rooted in anything like you're injured or anything of the sort. Was there any point in this timeline where frustration began to set in, or is it kind of just like train, focus on what's in my immediate control and see how things pan out? Like, how would you characterize how you were feeling throughout that stretch?
Yeah, I think definitely beginning was just pure frustration. You know, sure.
Yeah.
Everyone could understand, right? In the beginning, it was like 2-week lockdown, and then it went to a month, and then 2 months, and 3 months, and then, you know, we're still kind of in it, right? But it was just nonstop problem after problem. And when I say last year wasn't, you know, my year, I really mean it, because I had like car accidents. You know, even the simplest of things where we couldn't go out and get food, but you could get food delivered. Even the simplest things of like, if I got a DoorDash, right, the food would get delivered to the wrong house. You know,
thing after another kind of deal, eh?
Yeah, and I kept saying, I mean, this is probably my fault, but I kept saying, I was like, it can't get any worse than this. And it actually did, you know, so it wasn't fun. It was pure frustration in the beginning. But looking back at it now, I'll be honest, I don't know how I did it, I think I just took everything one at a time. But looking back at it now, if I just kind of like added it all up, I'm like, dude, that is the worst thing ever, you know. But it was really unfortunate. There's a lot of other things that happened. Man, it was rough. I had good friends that I met overseas, 2019, trained with, and we came back locked down, and a few of them, you know, passed away due to taking their own life, just because of the pure like depression that was going on in the lockdown. It was very sad, and but I was frustrated. But then, you know, you take a look at the positives. You just have to. You don't. It's not something that, like, you know, I'm not trying to give a motivational speech, But that is the only thing that kind of keeps you sane, is looking at the positives, you know? So I did look at the positives. I did start training more and did whatever I could. I did the max amount of whatever I could. I built a gym around my garage. Like you see in a lot of these fighters, they started building gyms in their garages and stuff. You know, I moved a lot of weights and all that stuff from into my garage, bag racks, mats. So then I was able to train with with some of my guys during the heat of it all. So I started, you know, getting back into it and whatnot. Slowly but surely, things opened up. We got back into our gyms and whatnot. So that definitely turned into, like what you said, was just motivation towards the end. But the beginning was definitely pure frustration.
Oh, I mean, very understandable, man. I mean, you covered a lot of territory there that would certainly indicate frustration and a myriad of other emotions. But to that point, happy that you're in the place you're in now. But just talking about the specific, places you are actually training at, it seems like there's three main gyms you're divvying your time between. Like, it seems like Resistance, Turlock, Omni Movement, like those are the key ones there. Is that still kind of what you're doing, like plying your trade between those three spaces there, or how's that all going?
Yeah, so Resistance opened up during the pandemic as well. So Gorilla Jiu-Jitsu, Dave Cameron is our head instructor. That was our main gym. That's been our main gym since, I mean, gosh, I don't know when. Like that's literally been my gym because, you know, for those that don't know, Dave Camarillo is my brother-in-law. So, you know, it's kind of been the family, you know, training with him at the gym. But then unfortunately, the gym closed down due to the pandemic and just all this crazy stuff. So then, because of all that, the gym Resistance opened up, you know. And when the gym opened up, it was a blessing in disguise, you know. Things needed to happen for us, I think, during the pandemic, for us to really kind of enjoy. Sorry about that, the sound in the background. I don't know if you can hear
Oh, no
it.
worries. Yeah, I didn't notice anything.
Basically, the Resistance was a split off gym. I believe it was from CSA, another big gym, but they split off just because whatever reason. And then because of our main gym, Gorilla Jiu-Jitsu, closing, Gorilla Jiu-Jitsu had many other gyms, affiliates, and Turlock was one of them. So then I went to the head instructor over there, started training with him. And then Omni Movement used to be based out of Richmond, but the landlords and, you know, shady landlords and all that stuff, you know, that's a conversation for another time, but led us to move out of that current location and then reopen and partner up with another gym that was a CrossFit gym. It was called the Barbell Athletics and Hercules. So then things looked bad in the beginning, but then they all turned out really well. The transition was smooth. Resistance was very kind. The head instructors there, the owners. I'm training with a lot of high-level guys now, as opposed to back in the day at Gorilla. It was me and a few other training partners, a couple other pro fighters. We're a small gym. We manage, but still, just, you know, getting to mix it up with all these other guys is great. And then on top of that, during the pandemic, I got introduced to Black House. Kenny Johnson, through a good friend of mine. So I was able to go up to Los Angeles and train with the Black House crew for at least, you know, 2 to 3 weeks. So I was able to get in a good mix over there too. So I was really happy training there. So you honestly like can't ask for a better training system, you know, during COVID. And even if it wasn't in COVID, that was still an incredible training. All this high level training for me really, it just really opened my eyes up to new stuff and where I want to get, because I train with so many good guys now, you know. So it really got me to see, like, man, there's a world outside my world. I need to get better like that.
Yeah, I mean, speaks volumes to the adaptability amid all of this for sure. But it's curious because, like, I was doing a bit of, backstory on you, and it seemed like you were bullied as a kid. You were talking about the martial arts connectivity in the family there a little bit. But it seemed like the martial arts training was maybe a little rough early on for you, but you grew to kind of enjoy it with time. Was there any kind of epiphany moment with that, or was it just this gradual, like, okay, I'm improving, I'm getting better at this kind of deal?
I think this is a funny story, but I don't think there was a one specific moment, but I do recall the one moment I had that. So I, yeah, you're right. I hated training with adults. I don't feel like it paid off. You know, when you're going, like, day by day, nothing seems like it changes. But when you look back at it, everything's different, you know? That's kind of like the same way my martial arts journey was like. One time at school, it was in high school, I believe I was a sophomore. This kid, I had already been training jiu-jitsu for, you know, like 4 or 5 years now. This kid basically, I think it was during wrestling practice, he just shouted some racial slurs at me, something silly that, you know, kids, I mean, we're just kids, you know, we're teenagers, we say stupid stuff to each other, but he specifically picked on me because, you know, I was Asian or something like that, you know, and I was smaller. So then he ran after me during wrestling practice because I think I just mouthed off something back, just along the lines of, like, you know, I just made fun of him. Just, you know, whatever he said, I kind of gave back. He ran after me in the wrestling practice because I believe from what I remember, he was with his girlfriend and, you know, our high school kids, big group. You know, he said something to me. He didn't expect me to say it back. I think I was just fed up. Ran after me in the locker room. He ran into a guillotine of mine and I fell on my back and I choked him unconscious. And that's when I was like, oh, shoot, this is awesome. I mean, I don't promote violence, but, you know, I mean, come on, like, the kid could have tackled me under the ground and, like, cracked my head open. I don't know. I'm just trying to defend myself here, you know?
Oh,
like,
totally. Yeah.
You know, it could have been really bad because especially in the wrestling room, there's the locker rooms, which had metal, you know, on it, and the doors were open. So we could have ran into that or the door handle because, you know, where the setting was at. But when he ran into me, I just managed to snag on a quick guillotine. And then I was like, oh, I do this move all the time at practice, and I'll just do it here. Because when he ran after me, I was thinking, I was like, oh, what should I do? Should I pull guard here and just roll him over, like do a sacrifice throw? And all this was going through my head when it was going down. And then afterwards, I realized when I choked him, I asked some of the people standing next to me, I was like, hey, is he out? Is he unconscious? So then I rolled him over. I got up and I was getting ready to, like, you know, fight. But then he was already out. And I was like, oh, cool. So I grabbed his legs because I'm like, this is what we do at jiu-jitsu. So I lifted up his legs and I woke up. And he was like, basically, like, what happened? I was like, oh, you tripped and fell. And then he was like, oh, what? And then he was just so confused. And that's when I was like, wow, this jiu-jitsu stuff works. I was like, I think I'm picking up some stuff. And it helped because not a lot of people picked on me shortly after that because he was a really big guy. You know, he was also like a football player on the football team. So it was kind of nice to see that martial arts paid off. And the fact that when it all happened, I was able to relook at it and go like, wow, everything kind of happened in slow motion. Like, it wasn't like when I used to get bullied where I closed my eyes and like six other things happened. I just got kicked in my stomach and I got slammed on my feet. You know, like that didn't happen anymore. That was, now it's like, oh, he's about to do this. Well, I guess I could do that. You know, it's like a Sherlock Holmes movie, you know?
Well, that's just such an amazing coming of age moment, and, you know, based, and you're handling it very classy, but it seems like that guy really had it coming to him. I get what you mean. You don't want to be promoting violence necessarily or whatever, but it seemed like that guy had it coming to him. It could have happened to a worse guy based on what you're saying.
I would think so.
But yeah, I think certain things are interesting in doing the, you know, backstory on you because, like, I'd seen some releases saying that you know, secured a Peruvian necktie, and on some of the aggregators online, it says that, but I heard an interview where you were looking to differentiate between it. Like, you were saying there's the Chinese necktie out there, like a different, you know, grip variation as opposed to, you know, its Peruvian and Japanese counterparts. I was curious, like, what are the different nuances with the grip there for the Chinese necktie?
Yeah, it's funny you say that. I guess, you know, I just called it the Chinese necktie because of, you know, there's like the Peruvian, right? And then there's the Japanese. And then I heard from someone, this isn't like a big ADCC world champion or BJJ world champion, but I came across a training partner one time. He called his the American necktie. And it's just funny. The American necktie is the one where you use a gi, actually. You pull the gi down near their neck and you throw your legs up in the same position. He just called it American necktie because he was like, you know, you wear suits and you have to have a collar, this and that. So it's kind of funny the way people broke it down. And I'm like, well, you know, because I do MMA, I don't really use the gi like that. I train in gi and I compete in gi, don't get me wrong, but I would like to use grips that could it's more transferable to, you know, no gi because, you know, no gi transfers to MMA very well. So then when I started using this move and I broke it down a little bit more with some of my training partners and coaches, I noticed that they, when they did it, they would grab their wrist. They just basically grab their wrist as if you're grabbing a single leg, you know, and whatnot. And their arms are always longer than mine, so that they're able to hop over someone's body quite easily. And I'm also not the most flexible guy in the world, so it was difficult. So I needed like a C grip. Like one hand is holding a C, and then the other hand is like, you know, thumbs up, upside down, basically. So then when your hand is like the grip C, or like, you know, it's like the you're doing the letter C. I was like, oh, that's supposed to be Chinese. You know, I was like, I'm Asian, I'm Chinese, so why not call it the Chinese necktie? So that's kind of where it came from. And then some people made it a little bit like of a political statement, because my mom is Taiwanese and I lived in Taiwan, and there's like a little China and Taiwan, you know, back and forth going on. So then I ended up deciding, I was like, yeah, maybe I should call it the Asian necktie. You know, I just don't like, I'm not a politician, and I don't know why it was like a talk, but that's basically what people came to know it as, because I used to hit it at tournaments very randomly, and it always seemed like so unassuming when it happened. So that's why I call it the Chinese, and I have like a different name variation for it because of the grip.
Well, I think that's cool, and I appreciate you giving me the insight behind it, because I'd heard it in the interview and I was curious. It's like, I'd like to understand the nuance there just from my layman kind of perspective. But, you know, talking about your opponent in this fight coming up here, I'm kind of wondering, like, are you an individual who like avidly does tape study on your opponents, or do you more allocate that to like your coaches and things of that nature?
No, we do. We do film study and whatnot, but it's kind of weird because I used to do like footage, like watch. I'd like to think of myself as like the Batman of MMA. You know, no superpowers, but you know, very do my homework. You know, I got my prep time going, so I'd have like, you know, several computer monitor screens in a dark room to simulate the cave, and I just, you know, look up all this footage and whatnot. I used to do that because I needed, you know. But not this time. And the reason why I say not this time is because I honestly trained so much during the pandemic that, because I got to have fun. There was no goal. I got to just go in the gym, practice stuff that I suck at. I work on stuff that I needed to get better at. I just worked on like literally being in all these bad positions, so that when I end up in them, I know how to escape. I have the confidence to know how to escape. And, you know, honestly, if you work backwards like that, you know, how much better are you? You know, if you go into a fight having one weapon versus being able to be put in all these bad spots and survive, you know, the strongest animal in the world, or in the animal kingdom, I guess you could say, isn't like the lion or, you know, like the tiger. But it's the animal that's most suitable to adaptation. That's what survives the longest, you know? So in my opinion, if I can survive the longest in training and doing all this stuff, when I go into a fight, I'm most suitable to adapt. So for my next fight, there's no real game plan. I mean, if you are a fly on the wall in my training room, you would think that we were joking about having no game plan, you know, just because I've been training for so long and I've been working on so many new skills. Why should I go into my next fight with a very specific game plan when, let's say, I go out there and he got better? You know, you're only as good as your last fight, right? Well, my last fight was a year and a half ago, you know, and I don't know when his was, but let's say it was longer than that. Then how much better did he get? You know, we can't assume based off his last footage. So I definitely think this next fight will be very interesting, because it's one of the first few fights where I'm not going there with any of the injuries that I had to go into. I don't have to make any of these random changes or, like, you know, opponents. The only thing I have to take into consideration is the elevation, because it's Colorado. That's why I'm heading out there, you know, a week and a half early. But other than that, I mean, there's nothing I think you could really throw in this fight, you know, with my opponent's, you know, build and size that would really throw us off, just because we've kind of seen it all during the pandemics, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And you talk about wanting to get out there early and acclimate yourself. Like, it just seems like on a lot of levels, so just the different facets of the game, you have like a very cerebral kind of approach. Like, you even see it in your nickname, just being the shadow, just the, you know, defensive elusiveness, but also having like the economy of offense and everything like that. Is that something you've always had as part of your approach? Like, does it come from, I guess, having like martial arts in your life for such a long period of time? Like, where does that like cerebral kind of approach come from? Is it something you've always had or just something you've developed more with time?
Definitely not something I had. I think the reason why I need that is because of the lack of, like, I need efficiency. The reason I need efficiency is because I'm not, you know, I don't have any of those gifts that those some of these athletes have. So when you say the word cerebral, you know, what I think of is just not only the preparation, but like you said, the defensiveness. Well, I need to be defensive because I don't like getting hit. That's one.
Sure.
You know, I don't think I need that, but yeah, you got guys like Nate Diaz that are, you know, zombies, you know, or Korean zombie, you know, who just fought this last weekend.
Yep.
You know, you got guys like that who don't mind eating a punch to trade. But I know I'm not like, I don't have like a adamantium skull, you know, like my skull isn't like thick like theirs. I'm already not very good in school. You know, I did finish college, you know, so I definitely don't want to get hit more than I need to. And,
sure, yeah.
You know, it's not like I have like these hands of stone where, or like these shins of steel where like I could just trade and get in firefights. I know how long I know how much damage my body could take. And before people go like, yeah, but it has to do with your mindset, this and that. I'm like, no, it has to do with genetics too. You know, yeah. If you're not built for a firefight, don't go in there thinking you are capable of a firefight because your career is going to get cut short. You know, not everyone's like Robbie Lawler, you know, not everyone's like Anderson Silva who could fight later into their careers. You could use these people as inspiration, but don't use them as a gauge because you're not them, you know. Yeah. And I learned that early on. I'm like, I'm not these guys. I'm not Manny Pacquiao. I'm not Floyd Mayweather. I can't do what they do, you know. So I need to develop a sense of, I need to take inspiration from this, see what works. You know, you see Manny Pacquiao, what is his main weapon? Speed. So I'm like, okay, well, I need to develop some sort of speed. I can't just be, you know, weak. So I trained really hard to rewire the my body and brain. I'm like a 50-50 type of believer when it's like you have a max limit of speed and strength because of your genetics. But then at the same time, I feel like if you think like that, you're going to limit yourself too. You know what I'm saying? Like if I'm like, I can only lift, you know, if I can only bench 200 pounds because my genetics tell me, I feel like you're limiting yourself because you could always probably do more than what you think you're capable of. But at the same time, I do recognize that there might be a limit. I just don't care to find out what that limit is. You know, like that's the kind of mindset I have. So it's definitely smarter too, because I can't just go into the gym every day and hit the bag like for an hour and work on this. That, you know, I want to be more efficient with my work. I want to be the guy that is able to reach the top faster, because the one thing I don't have is time on my side, and I don't have those natural abilities. So what do I need to do to catch up? So I just think of it like that. And and I think that's where that cerebral approach comes in, because I don't want to get in a firefight with this guy. If he misses, if I work on slipping jabs and countering off of it, and he has a lazy jab, then I know I could take him apart like that. So why not go that route instead of, you know, going like, oh, you know, go in there and firefight and bring the dog out of you, you know, that I'm not, yeah. I can't do, you know. So that's where it came from.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, totally makes sense for sure, and everything like that. This is yeah, this is an intriguing fight here. And like, I mean, you were saying before, like you were kind of curious about when his last fight was. It was actually December 2019. So almost kind of a similar dynamic in as far as their... Yeah.
Wow, I didn't know that. That's awesome.
Yeah, so going to...
Similar time frame, because my last fight was like January 12th and his was December. Nice.
Yeah, exactly. It compounds the intrigue for me. It's just one of those things where it's like, where are these guys' skills at now? I mean, like you guys had put together great performances prior, but just like the amount of time and the leveling up and all that. So yeah, definitely compounding the intrigue. But before, I was mentioning your official nickname, The Shadow. I mean, I think it's kind of cool you've got a street nickname too, The Boba King. Do you still got that going pretty strong?
Yeah, The Boba King. That was kind of like self-proclaimed and, You know. it was funny because after my fights, have you ever had boba before?
I have. It's been a little bit with the pandemic, but yeah.
Okay, yeah. So, you know, it's pretty good depending on, you know, if you like tea or milk tea and whatnot, or if you even like the texture of it. But, you know, it basically was just like, it was a pre-fight interview and I was kind of like, you know, talking I was like trying to build up the fight because we're told to build up the fight, trash talk a little bit. But my mom told me if I said anything stupid, she'd, you know, slap the crap out of me. You know, so I was like, okay, I'm not going to say anything stupid. But I do remember, out of curiosity, I'm one of those guys when I show up to an event, right? It doesn't matter what it is. I like to ask questions about behind the scenes stuff. So when I go out there and they're setting up the cage, I'm like, oh, where'd you guys get the cage imported from? You know, or like, which manufacturer did you use? You know, it's very like business ask questions because I like to connect the dots. You know, it's like if there was like a conspiracy board, I'd be like the spider web chart. You know, I like to connect all the dots. Yeah. That's kind of like the way my mind works. I don't know why, but it just always has. Again, it's the Batman inspiration. I like to know everything. So when I went to the arena, I was like, oh yeah, what time does this place close? Because you guys got like 12 pro fights, man. You know, and they're like, oh, we close at 10. We need to, you know, try to like, we need to start on time. We can't, you know, do delay this and that. So then when I found that out, when we did the pre-fight interview, I was like, well, I don't want to say I'm going to knock my opponent out like every single guy on the same card that they say, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm like, well, I heard that the arena closes at like 10. So I need to get out of there earlier. And then also my mom, you know, she's not super strict, but at the same time, she doesn't treat me like I'm anything different than the little kid that I am. You know, she doesn't go like, oh, you know, you have a business meeting, or yeah, you have a celebration at the club afterwards. She goes, hey, the dishes still need to be done the night of your fight. You just need to finish your fight. Come home, do the dishes, you know, then you can go do the stuff that you want to do, which is hilarious. Cause I'm like, mom, I'm 23. I'm on a main, I'm on the main, like I'm the first fight of all time in Taiwan in like a non-club venue. You know, this is like mainstream, you know, we're like going big mainstream, and I'm fighting in the arena that my mom used to sneak out into and go watch concerts, you know, which is really cool. But she doesn't, you know, Asian parents, man, they're just so like stoic. So she's like, yeah, after your fight, don't forget, you gotta, you know, don't celebrate too hard because we gotta go, you have dishes you need to get done from that morning, you know, which is preposterous to me. I'm like, mom, cut me some slack. But so basically I said that, and then the interviewer asked me, what am I doing in Taiwan other than like fighting? Like, what else do I look forward to in fighting? And you know, you're supposed to say the culture, like the people, but I kind of went off script and I was like, yeah, I came back here for the hot pot of boba because it's so much cheaper out there. It's like $5 for all you can eat a hot pot. It's like 50 cents for a large boba drink, and in the States it's like $4 or $5, you know. Yeah. So I just went there and I was just kind of like, yeah, I looked to, you know, get my fight done early because the arena closes at 10, and then there's some boba shops that close before that because, you know, it was just like in the area, so I need to get this done fast. And the way I said it was kind of like it just built up hype, and I was just kind of talking for the promotion, but this was my first debut as 35 or so. It's kind of I didn't think it would be a quick finish. Next thing you know, I get a 60-second knockout or a 52-second knockout. I'm like, holy crap, this is awesome. And then after the fight, people went and got boba for me. So after I did my medical check, I came back into the arena, or I came back outside the stadium, and I was just like, you know, no one cares about small-time MMA fighters. Everyone goes home, right? But because I was like the highlight of the night, because I'm ABC, American-born Chinese, I spoke Mandarin, I didn't have any tattoos, which they like over there. I mean, don't get me wrong, they have a tattoo culture there, but the general public, the audience, like the you know, the mainstream like audience, like that has no idea about MMA, they don't want to see someone with tattoos and like a Conor McGregor, you know. They want to see the respectful martial artist, which I kind of came off that night as that. And when I came back into the arena, there's so many people buying me boba and all this stuff. And then that's kind of where it started. So ever since then, there's been some crazy stuff. Like, there's this guy who bought a boba drink from my last appearance in Taiwan. He had me sign his boba cup, and he took it home, didn't drink it, and he has it like a shrine. He literally has a shrine going in his home where he has like his fight gloves, you know, he has some like other like memorabilia, and then he has his boba cup signed by me, and he's not drinking the cup. It's just insane. I'm like, what is going on here? You know, like, I never thought I would come down to that. So I've been I talked to a lot of my boba connoisseur friends, and they're like, dude, you're like the boba king. Wherever you go, there's boba. And I started laughing so hard. I'm like, that's it. I think I'm the boba king, you know, like boba king by day and the shadow by night. Yeah. You know, so I think that's kind of how it kind of collided. It's very funny. But it's really cool. I never thought I would you know, have anything to do with that. So it's really cool.
Yeah, well, I love that insight there, man. And yeah, this fight is one I'm really excited about and everything. I want to be mindful of your time, though, and the presumably busy schedule you have readying yourself for this contest here. So to that point, is there maybe anything you'd like to add kind of as a parting thought as we're wrapping things up here, man?
Yeah, thank you for that. I really appreciate your time, too, for reaching out. You know, I never thought I'd get another... You know, I never knew when I was going to get another fight interview, so I'm static. I'm like super excited that I got all these interviews and chat with you guys, the MMA press again. You guys are awesome. Thank you for your time, and I'd like to just thank my management team for getting me this fight, all my new sponsors, and there's just too many to list off. So if anyone just wants to follow me, you can follow me on Instagram. My at is Kai Wu. Same thing for Twitter and TikTok, because TikTok's a thing now. I'm still learning how to use that, and then I also have a YouTube channel. You can just Google me, and I'm sure you can find it.
Well, like I said, this is a great fight, one I'm very much excited for. And yeah, it was great getting to talk to you, man. I mean, it's good that you appreciate getting back out there and competing. And I appreciate you coming on the show and giving insights. But I think people are going to enjoy this fight going down July the 24th. Colorado Combat Club 7, Alejandro Rodriguez taking on Kai Wu in the main event. Thanks for coming on the show, man. Great first appearance. Hopefully the first of many. You enjoy the rest of your day there, man.
Yes, Dylan, thank you. Please, I'd always be honored to come on the show whenever you want. Thank you very much.